Welcome back to the Tip TV Finance Show. We're here with my co-host Alessio Rustani from LeadingTrader.com, and with our guest today, who's Nicole Elliott, private investor and technical analyst, and also a writer for the Investors Chronicle. Yep. How are you today, Nicole?
I'm all right. Yeah, I'm okay. Tickety boo, really. Sort of ticking along.
Yes, enjoying the Indian summer that we're having.
Yeah, it's jolly good, actually. It's London at its best.
Makes a difference, doesn't it? Right. I understand that you're going to be speaking about volatility today.
Yeah, I thought so, because I think we mentioned this last time I was on, that it had been so unbelievably quiet in August that it had taken me by surprise, and I was rather disappointed, actually, nursing positions that aren't going very much anywhere. You know, it's boring. And what you hear trotted out all the time is markets hate volatility, don't they? I mean, this is just all the time you hear it. Ooh, markets hate uncertainty. Markets hate volatility. Well, yesterday, CMC came out blaming the summer lull in the markets for a drop in their profits. So let's get this right. Sometimes we all need some volatility. Otherwise, nothing happens and it's not worth getting out of bed for. End of. No commissions are generated, no trading revenue is generated, no losses, of course, are neither accrued, and just nothing happens. And then you can get too much volatility, which, I mean, certainly goes a long way into scaring off non-professional investors.
Yeah.
Sometimes it goes so far that it actually stops professional investors making markets.
Well, I remember back in the 2008 crisis, the market crash of that year, a lot of brokers and spread betting firms in the UK were telling their clients not to trade, purely because they were afraid that they would lose so much money because the volatility was so high back in that period. The volatility was so high that their retail customers were getting crushed in the markets, and they were afraid they're going to lose customers.
Are you sure they were telling them that?
They were telling them
not to trade because everybody knew the market was a sell, and they didn't want them to make money.
No, I remember this because I remember speaking to a few brokers and customers of certain firms, literally telling their customers that they had to be very careful and actually not to trade because they were afraid of losing their customers after a huge volatility. Because think about it. I mean, in those days, volatility was so high. The average trader was putting a stop loss of 20 pips on the euro and the pound when the volatility was almost double that, no, triple, quadruple that on a daily basis. So you can imagine.
It depends. I mean, as a market maker, right, if I can make prices this wide and force my customers to drive a bus through the damn thing, I'm going to clean up. I'm going to make loads of money. So it depends where you're coming from as to what is too much volatility. It also depends on what you're used to.
Yeah.
So if you're, say, a euro-dollar trader at the moment, and we've gone basically nowhere for almost 2 years, you've got it in your head that 20 pips is a lot. No.
It isn't.
No, not when you go and start trading South African rand, let's say, okay? And not when you go and you start trading certain retail stocks, boutiques and stuff like that, that regularly lose 20% in a day.
Right.
Okay, so it's to do with our biases as well as to whether we can cope with changes in volatility. And let's also not forget, and I wanted to show you some charts here. My first one is of the S&P, which, as we all know, has been terribly, terribly quiet. I'm afraid they're rather faint, because I've taken this one back to 2008 on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
At the top in green, you've got actual price action. And you can see that for months now, we're not really going anywhere up or down. On that, I've plotted observed volatility in that blue line, and you can see that it peaked. No,
oh, okay.
No, careful. This is what I'm trying to point out. There are all sorts of ways of measuring volatility. This is close-to-close volatility on a closing basis, on a rolling 14 period.
Yeah.
Yeah? Okay, so you can see it peaked in 2009, at the same level and at the highest it's been since 1987.
Mm.
Okay, so that was very expensive. It was up there trading at 32%. So from one closing price to the next one, okay, on an annualised basis, that's 32%. Okay, and then it comes right down, and at the moment it's trading at 10.7%. That's observed volatility. The VIX is one, just one, of many implied volatility measures that I can use. And I've plotted that one in orange in the middle. Okay, so that's a CBOE VIX. But that is just one.
Yeah.
It is just one. I can do tailor-made options, right, with a market maker. I could say, right, I want to buy a call at this level. I want to buy a put at this level. I want it to run for 1 month, 3 months, 6 months, 5 years, whatever I want. I'm not forced into this at all. I can do something tailor-made and infinitely superior in terms of hedging my issues that I've got with the market. So that's another one. And everyone's moaning that the VIX is too low at the moment. Now, they're saying it's too low. It's ridiculous, and it'll all end in tears. But the point is, right now, it's trading at 11.7%, which is a full 1% higher than observed volatility. That's a 10% difference. That's a premium to what is actually happening. So as an insurer, if I can sell it for more than it should be, I'm going to make money. That is the issue here, the difference. And if you can see here on the VIX, on the left-hand side, when we peaked in 2009, it peaked ahead of the actual market, right? But there it was trading at something like 65%, double what the actual market was trading at. And that's what an insurer, somebody who's selling insurance, because that's what this is. You are buying insurance, and it's a measure of how terrified you are, how stupid you are to pay through the nose, how much the market maker expects to cover his potential losses. And that's what you've got here. And then at the bottom, I've got volume and open interest. Okay, volume of the bars. And open interest on the futures contract. This is the futures contract, right? And you can see that both volume and open interest have done nothing but dwindle since the peak late in 2008. And that means money that's not being made. Every time somebody trades, there's a commission to be paid. There's a clearing charge to be paid. Yeah? Mm. It's business not making the money anymore. So, okay, volatility is good for professionals. On the whole, it is very, very good for market professionals. For some investors, it is also excellent. Sort of professional investors, I'd class them like hedge funds, like myself, people like that. We do like volatility.
And also intraday traders as well. They feed on that. Mm.
Absolutely. You need that. Otherwise, it's just impossible to make money. So here we've got a market that had been extremely volatile and at some of the highest levels of volatility ever seen to now being not flat on its back exactly, but certainly looking rock bottom. I mean, this could last forever. I mean, the trend is clearly on the way down, isn't it?
We've got a couple of charts to go through.
So then I thought on a daily basis we'd look at cable, because that's been quite the opposite, hasn't it? On the news that Britain voted to leave the European Union, we had our biggest one-day move in at least a decade. I don't know how far back my memory goes, but it's huge. And then we've stopped. And then underneath, I've got the whole thing again with volume and open interest, and you can see that massive spike in volume as everybody's chasing their tail. And yet, open interest remains quite high and steady. So this is definitely, it's got to be people who are comfortable with their positioning. They're not sort of tweaking around the edges. And underneath I've got my three volatilities. The one that goes up to the highest is the observed historical volatility on the day, and then it tails off, you see, because it's a 14-day rolling period.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's why it tails off slowly. And then the red line is the cost of a put, i.e. the right to sell a pound. It's 1 month at the money, 10 delta. Those are the strikes I monitor, okay? Because, again, there'll be a whole host of different strikes and maturities that I could look at. But this is the sort of vanilla one. And you can see that since before Brexit, and post, it has been more expensive than observed volatility. And the spread between the dotted green line, which is the same put, the same maturity on a put, has been consistently one way round. They're all buying puts on the pound, aren't they? And now it's come in and they're sort of quite neck and neck. In other words, they're fairly priced now. Yeah? The premium on the puts has come out. That's really interesting. Whereas the premium was whopping ahead of the referendum. And my last chart is the same idea of the euro on a weekly basis with the price of the spot euro at the top, sorry, euro futures. And you can see that you have these big spikes in volume. And that's really interesting. Those are on weeks where you've got a not just a big range, but you start at one end and end at the other. In other words, people are forced into cutting positions because the market never pulls back enough for you to scratch the trade or whatever you're going to do. So that's where the volume's coming from, people who are forced into trading. And then again, I've got my historical volatility, which is the one that peaks on the left, puts and calls, where the puts are red. And again, you can see that's the put to sell a euro versus dollar. You can see this absolute endemic bias that people have had since the beginning of 2015 anyway. That the dollar is going to get stronger and therefore you want to sell these other major currencies against it. Again, we had this real weird sort of move here in June in the euro. And that's really bizarre, isn't it? That the premium for the puts on the euro pre-Brexit exploded. It just doesn't make sense, does it? Now they've come right back in.
Right, exactly.
But they're still a tad more expensive than the calls.
We just go back to that pound chart, guys, just for a moment.
Yeah.
Because, Nicole, we had an interesting conversation about a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about the fact that insiders, we just talked about this earlier as well, commercial hedgers were holding record long positions. These are insiders, so they were long on the British pound, and whereas everybody else was bearish on the pound, calling for parity against the dollar, in other words, pound to go to one against the dollar. And it just goes to show how the balance of powers finally come into equilibrium. And in this session, we seem to have a double bottom here. Some have called this almost a long-term bottom on the pound. I don't know if I can go that far. But what do you think? I mean, do you think this is a situation where we've seen an extreme, you know, extreme pessimism, bearishness on the pound, and now this could be a long-term bottom on the pound?
It's extraordinary how many people call for parity on
exactly.
the pound, either against the dollar or against the euro.
Yeah, right.
Every time it gets sort of closes, one
right.
to one, here we come, oh, dead cert. I mean, what is it that, why do they hate the pound so much? I don't get it, but that is a sort of mentality, is
right.
it? It might be people trying to make a name for themselves, trying to you know, create a
in
stir.
In the tail on the donkey.
Yeah. Quite frankly, that's not terribly professional. It's not very useful, and I think we all know how to see through that sort of, you know,
sure.
silly cult. And quite frankly, it's stupidity.
Absolutely.
Quite frankly, what I would say, Alessio, is that here cable is terribly cheap. There is no doubt. If you look historically,
yes.
only once has it been cheaper. Than it got to now, only once.
1985?
It's a Plaza Accord. Right. And that was a question of the US dollar being super strong as opposed to the pound being rubbish.
Oh, I understand.
Okay, so whichever way you look at it, on a mean regression, on a deviation, on a this, on a that, on a
well,
chart,
since
or
your
whatever.
Name is Elliot, you'd look into Elliot waves as well.
I don't tell anyone.
I'm just joking.
So, yes, I would agree with you. Yes, we do have a potential double bottom there at 128.5. And we on a monthly chart, we have something which in candlestick lingo, which is Japanese, is called a hammer.
Right.
In other words, you start at the top of the range,
yes.
you look into the abyss, and you scurry all the way back up again and
so
end
this
up...
This is on the monthly?
Monthly.
Oh, interesting.
So imagine that. You have to use your...
Yes.
mind here,
yes.
okay? And in July and August, which is the double bottom bits,
right.
you've got two hammers. to perfect little hammers.
On support, presumably. Yes.
Yeah, well, on this potential double bottom that you pointed out. And I would agree with you there. I think, well, I've done this before here with you, Zach, but I think the pips will really start squeaking if we start trading above $1.35 to the pound. And people will be forced to rethink.
Well, speaking of pip squeaking, we've run out of time. Nicole Elliott, the trader at the Investors Chronicle, thank you very much for coming in today. We'll be back with a couch after the break.